And hello again, everyone. I'm John Ray, and welcome back to the Price and Value Journey. If you're a solopreneur service provider, or maybe you've hired an employee or two for your services practice, and you are increasingly getting to a point where you have to confront an important decision, and that decision is whether you want to scale the business. Today, I've got the business scalability expert. It's Dr. Terry Doc Dockery. Doc to his friends and even those that aren't his friends. He's a true maestro in the realm of business scaling and leadership development. He's got a career that spans decades, and he stands out as a licensed business psychologist, and the name of his firm is The Resolve Firm. He's a beacon of guidance, really, for businesses that range from small enterprises to Fortune 500 giants across the country, and particularly here in the Atlanta region. He has unparalleled expertise in doubling revenues without the baggage of stress or risk, and has not only propelled companies to new heights, but also in that process, he cultivates environments in those companies in which they become nationally recognized as best places to work. Doc's insights have been crystallized in his Amazon number one bestseller, Leadership, Happiness, and Profit, 12 Steps to a High Performance Business. And that book is a great book, and I recommend it. And it offers a roadmap to success that balances professional achievement with personal fulfillment. One quote he's got that I love to share: there are 100 ways to make money, but you've only got one family. It's a shame to ruin your family relationships over making a buck. Now, beyond his professional prowess, Doc is a professional harmonica player. He sings and plays in several different bands. And here's the part that I need to find out more about. He was honored with the Lucille Award by B.B. King himself. I need to hear more about that.
That's right, 1988. We won it's a national competition in Memphis, Tennessee The award was at the Peabody, but the competition was at the Daisy Theater.
Okay.
And at the W.C. Handy Awards, which is the blues equivalent of the Grammys.
You're right.
B.B. King gave us the award himself. He played right before us in the show, and we always tell everybody that B.B. King opened up for us.
I love it. Yeah, that's the real deal. If you got an award from B.B. King, that's the real deal. You're the real deal, man.
It was an honor and just a one of the most fun, one of my greatest achievements. It was a stellar moment.
Doc likes to say he puts the harm in harmonica, but obviously we know he's joking because he wouldn't get an award from BB if he did that. Doc Dockery, welcome to the Price and Value Journey.
Thanks, John. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Great to have you. Let's talk about, I want to get right into it with happiness, because this is something you explicitly talk about with your clients and those that you consult with, and that being an important element of what you advocate.
Yes, sir. To me, that's the name of the game. And, you know, regardless of what your philosophy or religious beliefs tell you is going to happen after you die, I think it's important to have fun while you're here. And so that enjoyment of life, I think, is what we're all shooting for. Scaling a business is just a way to meet one of the four major sources of happiness, which is, from the research in positive psychology, a caring relationship with yourself, liking yourself, caring relationships with other people, because we're pack animals, and we're not happy unless we make close relationships. It's helped us survive for millennia, right? Work that you love doing, because you're going to do a whole lot of it, and that passion helps you overcome obstacles as you encounter them. And then the fourth one is enough money to pay your bills with some left over for fun. So I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and a lot of that discussion is, how much money is that to pay your bills and have the fun you want to have? So deciding how much is enough and what your vision is a big part of the process.
We have cheapened the definition of happiness, have we not? In other words, as a business society in the United States, because we don't include all the things you included in the definition of happiness. We define happiness as making a lot of money and building a big company, and we don't really we go beyond that.
We have defiled it, John.
Yeah.
Because statistically, wealthy people are the least happy people in America. They're actually less happy than poor folks who aren't particularly happy.
Right.
It's the middle class that has enough money and time to enjoy their friends and family are the ones and keep their health. The CEO career arc is you spend the first half getting rich of your career and the second half paying off your ex-spouses and trying to buy your health back. And so we try to avoid that syndrome. And if we can scale up a business and enjoy the ride, then I feel like you're hitting on all cylinders.
I had a restaurant analyst tell me that she judged the quality of the stock of a restaurant, the one she ought to recommend, by how many exes the CEO had, because he had to work extra hard the more exes he had. And so the restaurant was more likely to be successful. That's pretty sad.
It is. So we're pitching balance here, right?
Yeah.
It's to me there, and I put it under the label of working smart.
Right.
You can work hard and you can do all those things that damage your health and your relationships, or you can work smart, scale it up to get it where you want it to be and meet your financial needs and enjoy the ride, is the way I always put it.
So what do I, as I'm thinking about scaling my business, what do I need to look for in myself to know that I'm going to be happy doing that? And how do I judge myself?
For me, if you're an entrepreneur already and you've got a going concern, then obviously you have what it takes to start. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a certain amount of risk tolerance. It's always a bumpy ride. And so those things are in place. And it really comes down to what you want to achieve. It comes down to the vision. Where are you headed? Mm-hmm. That's the first thing we always talk about. I run a CEO roundtable. Great group of folks, by the way. And we got a guy that's, I'll get the numbers wrong, but he's got a $30 million business, but he decided he wanted a $50 million business. He's thinking lately, he may not want a $50 million business. He's making plenty of money. He's got a happy family. He's thinking maybe he doesn't want to wrangle that complexity to grow it up. And I think that's great. You need to know what you want to start off with. So what's enough? How much is enough? So that ability to know yourself, I think, is probably the crucial element in that.
I guess where I'm coming from with the question is, I think a lot of people think they know themselves, but maybe don't, right?
Yeah, that's all of us.
We're all on that journey.
Carl Jung, we look at the Joe Harry window for blind spots, and one of the quadrants is the stuff that other people don't know about us and we don't know about ourselves, that collective unconsciousness or whatever. There's just, so that's part of the journey, is getting to know yourself. And my training in psychology is helpful there, because I try to tease out of folks what's really going to make you happy, and let's go do that. Not what your mom and dad told you or your uncle said was important, but what's going to make you feel fulfilled.
So before we get into some of the details of all this, what are some of the common issues across services firms that they have as they scale? What do all services firms that are trying to scale have in common?
The number one thing that I see is, if you're an entrepreneur, but especially a solopreneur, you have to be good at a lot of things, because there's a lot of moving pieces to running a successful business. So you usually find people that are bright and capable and ambitious, and they're good at a lot of things. They generally have trouble turning loose of some of those tasks, because they know they can do them well. And then when you start adding staff, when do you add a CFO? Because you need somebody who's better at managing the money than you are. When do you hire an HR person who's better at hiring and attracting and retaining people than you are, et cetera? So that ability to delegate is a good news, bad news thing. The good news is they're good at a lot of things. The bad news is they have trouble letting go and letting someone else do those things. Even though, candidly, when I used to do Fortune 500 consulting, those CEOs are well past that, because they know they'll hire an expert in a minute, because they know that their time is valuable and they need to spend it on other things.
And do you have any secrets on how those entrepreneurs need to cure themselves of that disease?
Hiring me is the best. They need somebody that they trust.
Yeah.
Who can show them the path to scaling up. And it takes some sales and influencing skills. You're going to say, okay, here's where you want to go. My experience is you're not going to get there doing what you're doing now,
mm-hmm.
but you can get there doing this. What do you think? Willing to give it a try? And you need somebody that you think is competent and caring, knows what they're doing, and is not trying to manipulate you or get over on you in any way. And it's a kind of a sales pitch. Would you be willing to try this? I've seen it work really well for a lot of folks, and we'll see what happens.
So relatedly, one of the things that I just heard you say that I thought was fit right into this discussion was your strengths and weaknesses, you being the CEO of your own business. Your strengths and weaknesses become the strengths and weaknesses of your organization. So expound on that in the context of scaling the business.
Oh, sure. When you're the leader of an organization, whether you're leading a team in corporate America or a nonprofit or you're a solopreneur, it comes down to who has the power and how they use it. What you reward is maintained and expanded. What you sanction or don't reward falls away. And so your strengths and weaknesses become the strengths and weaknesses of the business, because a business can never be better than the leader you are. If, for instance, if you're a domineering leader, then you're not going to attract and retain strong people who like autonomy and who want to be creative and want to help you grow your business. You're going to get compliant folks that are going to do what you tell them to do, and which is, you can make some progress there, but you're never going to really actualize the potential that you could. So if your weakness is some level of insecurity that you feel like you need to be domineering, then that will limit this growth of your business.
See, and you just said something that I want to take back to people knowing themselves. See, my theory is a lot of people don't connect their domineering tendencies to insecurity. In other words, they don't know the source of it. You're a psychologist, right? You've probably seen that thousands of times.
Yeah, and then you throw in hundreds of hours of individual therapy and it makes you an expert.
But I guess that's what I was getting at in terms of people knowing themselves and not really understanding the source of their strengths and the source of their weaknesses.
And that's what we do. We get to the root causes, and we don't beat people up for their weaknesses. We say, look, this is hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to talk about how it got there, we can do that. But it's really more important, stop doing that. You ever see that new heart thing where he's in therapy and the patient coming in says, what do you charge? He said, I just charged $5. He said, this won't take long. So she lays out her problems and he says, stop doing that.
Do you want the budget version of my advice or do you want the premium?
The point is, everybody has strengths and weaknesses. If they can get a good grip on what they are, you play to your strengths and then you build around that as you build your team. If you're going to scale, we were talking earlier about the best business developer I ever knew was one of the worst people managers I ever knew. So he hired himself an ace COO who was really good with people and had everybody report to that person, which was a very clever way to, and it's been very successful actually in multiple businesses because mm-hmm. of that, because he recognized what he enjoys doing, what he's good at, and then, built out his team to complement those skills.
So if I'm a solopreneur looking to grow my business, do I need to go to a therapist to get myself diagnosed first, or do I just need to learn about myself as I make mistakes scaling?
If you work with a good mentor coach, whether you're in a roundtable group or somewhere where you're getting folks who've done it already,
mm-hmm.
give you advice and show you the shortcuts.
Yeah,
a good advisor, whether it's a friend or a coach or whatever, knows how to give that kind of feedback and help you how to ferret those skills out and help you develop the ones that are going to give you the best results. So it's who you associate with and who you get advice from. I myself have gotten great advice and terrible advice on my journey. And if you can surround yourself with the kind of folks who are, once again, competent, caring, you can they'll help you figure that stuff out. Because my favorite mentor always said, it comes to your own behavior, all of a sudden you have the worst seat in the house. So you need to get some help with that.
Now, one of the things you talk about in your book is the principle of balance and justification. Now, that, please explain what that is for listeners, but that principle seems like an important one if you're thinking about scaling.
Exactly. Most things plot well on the normal curve. And if you, for instance, I was just talking this morning to somebody about assertiveness. If on the far left tail would be a passive person, on the far right tail would be an aggressive person. And I mean that in the way of running over other folks. And in the middle of that normal curve would be assertive, where you're asking for what you want, but you still remain caring about the other person. You're looking for a win kind of agreement on something. And so that principle of balance, once again, like in the four major sources of happiness, you really need a balance between all four: the relationship with yourself, relationships with others, work you love doing, enough money. It's about a balance. So what, when wealthy people run amok is when they spend too much time chasing money, and they, you read about it all the time, they destroy their health, they destroy their family relationships because they're out of balance.
Right.
I'm not saying if you want to be rich, you can be rich and happy. But you need to keep the balance if you're on your way there. Does that make sense? And a lot of where it's strategy, risk versus reward.
Right.
People that do well tend to take moderate risks over time. You can swing for the fence, and sometimes you'll win, sometimes you'll lose if you can afford to take that kind. But we talk about, we always evaluate risk in our strategic planning. Fit with the strategy, financial impact, ease of implementation are the three main factors we look at. Mm-hmm. As an example of, what's a risk we can afford to take in case we're wrong, but will give a significant financial boost in case we're
wrong? Right.
So most things plot well on that kind of normal curve. And I use PB&J just because I can put a peanut butter and jelly sandwich up there and people remember what we're talking about.
Right. Yeah, that's good stuff. So obviously, as you grow, you've got, when you're a company of one, you're the leader and you're the follower all at the same time.
Well, that's me. I'm a solopreneur.
Uh-huh.
I tried to scale three different times and realized that I'm not good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And realized that this is the best. There are pluses and minuses to any business model, but I've just found for me, this works the best.
Yeah. But as you, when you decide to scale, suddenly you've got to develop that leadership capacity that you may have, you may not have. You may not know for sure whether you have it because
right.
You may not have been in a position for your good qualities to come out and your bad qualities of leadership to come out.
And most people don't get leadership training, especially if, like, in the typical example is a lot of companies will take their best salesperson and put them in sales management, which is a whole different skill set. And what they most often accomplish is taking their best business developer out of the field and living in a management position that they're not good at.
Right.
Because we don't get the training unless you've just been lucky and gotten good training along the way and experience to do it. You have to figure it out on the fly.
So talk about developing that capacity and how that unfolds. Is it trial and error? Is there something I can do about it ahead of time? Talk about developing that leadership capacity.
Of course, the training, there are good training programs out there to give you the basics. And then, but I, the shortest path to learning any skill is to find somebody who's already good at it and have them teach you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll show you the shortcuts and avoid some of the trial and error, reinventing the wheel. Like in our CEO roundtable, that's one of the people have a challenge or an opportunity they're looking at, is almost inevitably somebody else who's already done it and learned the lessons that they can teach you so that you don't have to get out there and make the same mistakes they did. So finding yourself a good mentor or coach or colleague who's already done it is,
right,
is really the best way. But you can get in business schools and so forth there, and then there's all kind of training courses if you can get the basics in place. I'm going through a series of presentations on my book I call it the Scaling Skills Master's Degree. And we just given brief presentations on each chapter, and it's really meant to be a training program for people who want to scale up their businesses as an example. So.
Now, one of the things you talk about, Doc, is how effective leadership comes down to two things, consideration and process.
Right. The best leadership research that's ever been done was the Ohio State Leadership Studies, which happened over 20 or 30 years and a few decades ago. But the longitudinal study over a great many leaders, and they did all their fancy statistical Veramax rotations and so forth, and two factors emerged as being the most predictive of leadership success. The one that accounted for the most success by far was a factor that they named consideration, which means caring about your employees or your team. If you care about them, it's a whole lot more likely they're going to care about you and your business. You're the exemplar, you're the exemplar. And the second one,
which Well, let me stop you there a second.
Sure.
The order of that is important, right? You got to care about them first.
Well, you got the
before power. They go key out, right?
That's the leadership trickle down law, right? You got the power, what you reward, what your example. If you pad your expense account, you can count on your sales guys are going to do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get in trouble with the IRS, yada, yada, yada. But if you set the example, you set the tone. I think a lot of leaders, I had an ex-McKinsey guy one time tell me he would never say that to a client. Talk about the business, your strengths and weaknesses are the business's strengths and weaknesses. I said, well, that's the first thing I say to them, because that's the, you got this amazing amount of control. And if what you can control and what you can is huge in life. So if you know that you've got that control, you can use it wisely to create the kind of business and culture and financial results that you want.
You just told a story that's a vignette for The Problem with Big Consulting, I think. But okay, so consideration of others, those that report to you, and then process.
And it's actually the term they gave it was initiating structure.
Okay.
Which is essentially, hey, we're all here together. Why don't we put together a plan to get this thing done?
Mm-hmm.
Your strategic planning and then your tactical implementation planning. And so that being organized essentially in process efficiency. And it was the second most important factor. So out of all that research, literally decades of research, they said, here are the two things that make the most difference. And a point I always have to make, because I have to give condolences to us men, turns out what we're talking about is nurturing. And if you think about it a minute, women in general are a lot better nurturers than we are by socialization and biology or whatever. And I'm just saying, if you're not looking to, in your organization or as you add folks, if you're not considering the fairer sex as in leadership roles, you're missing an opportunity. Because as long as we can, there are other skills, of course, that are important. But that natural tendency to nurture and bring the best out of people is a huge asset to leverage as you're scaling a business.
And you've got to genuinely care about others, because this is not just about playing a game so you can get something from somebody else. You've got to genuinely nurture and be empathetic with others.
Oh, sure. That's the second, remember, the second source of happiness, caring relationship with other people. There's a great joy in that. It's, mm-hmm. It just comes natural to us. Yeah. It's biological. Now, when folks get in trouble, I'm actually working with some folks now that tend to care about other people more than themselves. They're candidly more generous with their employees than they are with themselves. And then they're out of balance.
Mm.
So we're saying assertiveness is asking for what you want, negotiating for what you want, but being mindful of the needs of the other person, looking for those win relationships. So in that particular instance, we're practicing assertiveness skills. I'm almost inevitably involved in conflict resolution. If you add team members as you're scaling up, you're going to have disagreements. If, like George Patton said, if everybody's agreeing about everything, then somebody's not thinking, because you need to have diversity of opinions, and that's how you get your best ideas. So you're going to have conflicts, and you need to know how to resolve them and move on with the best plan.
One of the metaphors you use for this in the book is parenting.
Sure.
Say more about that.
Good leaders are very akin to good parents. The reason being, people say, oh gosh, are you saying all my employees are children? For starters, we all got a six-year-old kid inside of us, but that's not the point.
Right.
You have more power than your team members or your employees. It's like a just like a parent does in the family. You're the one that's accountable for the performance, the happiness of the family. Same thing as the CEO or final decision maker of your business. You want to be a good parent. That is, you need to let them know you love them, appreciate all their efforts, but you can't spoil them. There are times when you have to set boundaries, or even you got rewards and sanctions. You know, there's a balance there too. So if you've hired good people, 80 to 90% of the feedback and interactions ought to be positive. But there'll come times when you say, nope, we love you, but that ain't going to fly. We need to do some things differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the parenting model. And it's because of the disparity in power. Once again, you're the boss. You got lots of control. Use it wisely. You know.
One of the things that comes out in what you are advocating is trust. That's part of the how you work with people is developing their trust,
sure.
Right? You talk about the definition of trust being doing what you say you will do and caring about the other person. What more should we say about trust?
Okay, so the way it works, trust is important so you can get teamwork. Teamwork is important so you can get production.
Mm-hmm.
The way you create that trust, people say, like, you could say, you do what you, this guy does what he says he's going to do so I can trust him. Then example I use is Attila the Hun. You know, you could trust him to rape and pillage, but that's not really what people usually mean. There's a missing caring about other people part to that.
Right.
So when you trust somebody, it usually means they'll do what they say they're going to do, and you can trust them to care about you and your family as well, just like we said from the beginning, that consideration piece. And that's the kind of trust that a solid relationship can be built on.
They're caring while they're doing what they say they'll do.
Right.
And, yeah.
And if you can't, I do a lot of conflict resolution work almost inevitably. I used to think that people would call me and work with me because they heard I was smart. That hadn't panned out real well. And being good looking hadn't helped either. So it's like people are usually in some kind of pain and they're feeling a need for some intervention or an expert to come in. And it usually involves conflict. Resolving those conflicts and building those trusting relationships is really important. And especially in family businesses, which is, I do a lot of work in family businesses. And what you said earlier, it's a shame to mess up family relationships over making a buck because you only got one family and there's lots of ways to make money.
For sure. Let's talk about identifying and hiring great people. You call them A players.
Right.
Let's first of all define what an A player is. And then let's get into identifying them and hiring them.
Okay. The traditional A player definition would be top 10% performer in whatever role you're considering. And it's just, if you got a team of A players and your competitor has a team of C players, you know what's going to come, what the outcome's going to be if you're competing for the same business. Hiring and retaining good people is the name of the game. A players, I actually do screening interviews, final vetting interviews for hires and C-level and key employee hires. And we look at, depending on the role, which is typically a leadership role, there's probably 50 or 60 things we look at, but there are 13 main ones, which I'm not going to be able to rattle off for you right here, but it starts with integrity and the other things we've talked about that predict team orientation, communication skills, the leadership management skills we talked about,
right.
Sales and influencing skills. Like at the very least, you're going to be selling ideas, whether you're a business developer or not, development or not. And so those are the kinds of things we look for, especially in management, leadership management positions. And if we do a fair amount of testing or assessments, I guess would be better a word to use for it. And then I do an extensive interview. And at the end of that process, we have a pretty good idea what the values and priorities and skills of that person are. And you can predict pretty much how they're going to do and what their potential for growth is over time. Am I answering?
Yeah, no, you are. The clients you work with, does the founder, the CEO, do they have a tendency to really hire people that look and talk and act and have the same characteristics that they do until they get the hang of this?
Yes, or the similar to me bias is what it's called in social right. psych. Yes, folks that they're comfortable with, or if they have, we all have insecurities, I'm not, but if they have major insecurities, they will tend to hire folks that they can easily control, but they won't know that's what they're doing.
Mm.
It'll be that, if that's a blind spot for them. But yeah, we all, I'm going to say this and regret it. There's a lot of HR people that don't know how to hire well because they're put in charge of keeping the company out of trouble versus hiring for potential a lot of times. So we're,
don't think that's a very controversial thing to say.
We look at what's going to predict success and we look for potential for growth, because if you want to make a really good hire, catch somebody early in their career who's going to be an all-star and then bring them on your team and let them take off and do their thing.
Right.
We're looking for the, it depends on your needs. Sometimes we just need a steady producer at the point of growth. It depends on where you are in your growth cycle. But hiring well is, I see a lot more bad hiring than good hiring. If you define that as somebody who's successful in the role and then can move on to take more responsibility over time.
We've heard so much about talent shortage and so forth over the last several years. Is there a talent shortage for A players?
No, not in my opinion. I just don't think people know where to find them. They don't know them when they see them. And then we've got all the folks like me, us boomers, spend too much time complaining about the millennials and the Generation Z folks instead of figuring out how to work with them, because it's like you can complain about them till the cows come home because they don't do things the way you do. But the fact is they're the future. And if you want to have a successful business in the future, you need to, I just don't think people are that different. They come up different. The pandemic messed up a lot of things for people.
Sure.
But folks are folks. And I think if you're a good leader and you create a culture that rewards that kind of ambition and drive and people achieving their individual goals, you're going to get those A players to come and stay with you.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that'll get me in trouble. Is that just not part of being a boomer, that you've got this self-assured sense that everybody that comes behind you is inferior to what you are?
That's what my parents' generation, like somebody named them the greatest generation. That irritated me no end. I said, hey, how'd you get to be that? I'm pretty cool. I think, what is that quote back from Roman days where the guy was ranting about the young people nowadays don't have any values? And I think that's been going on for a time immemorial.
Yeah.
But the clever thing to do is to find the common ground, find those when people haven't changed that much. They still have personal goals. They still have the same human needs.
Mm-hmm.
And different cultures, different businesses find different ways to meet those needs. But that's what the good leader does, is figure out how are we going to set up environment? Because the fundamental attribution error is that we tend to over attribute control to people and under attribute control to environment. You create an environment that brings out the best in people and you'll rock and roll. That's what good leadership is about.
I think the other fundamental attribution error is judging the extremes of any group by judging the average of any group by the extreme.
Exactly. I'm the proud owner of three millennials.
Yeah.
And they're just about the coolest people on the planet. One of my kids is an addiction psychiatrist. I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
He's out there doing good work, paid a lot of dues. I'm proud of the other kids too, but he was an extreme example of a guy that people rant about millennials and no work ethic and this and that. And he just finished, 482 years of schooling or something, whatever it took to. So I'm just saying, if you understand people and if you see them as basically good and industrious and capable of learning and growing, and you're hiring those kind of people, there really is no limit to how you can scale your business. It just depends on how big you want to get. That's what I always tell people when they're talking about scaling. Okay, cool. Well, if you've got good values and we've got some basic skills, how big do you want to get?
So if you say that the A players, there's plenty of them around, is the so-called talent shortage due to those A players not wanting to go work for that particular company? In other words, the issue here is reversed. We've got an older generation. A lot of them say the younger generation is not worth much, but maybe it's turned the other way around. Maybe, the younger generation doesn't want to work for the older generation.
Maybe we got a leadership shortage.
Yeah. Is that it?
In my opinion, yes. You can always complain about how things aren't just like you want them to be, or you can focus on the positive and on what you can control. And those are the people that are just scaling these awesome businesses while the other folks are still complaining about one thing or another. It's always going to be imperfect.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're in some death spiral of talent. Where it's just that things have changed, and especially we boomers, we're not doing things exactly like we used to, and it just rocks our world. So we have to decide how we're going to respond to that.
Yeah. You talk about feedback being the breakfast of champions.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about feedback from your employees.
We always look at, when we're scaling up, individual performance and team performance. So yeah, the thing that's going to make the most difference is the leader, the CEO, improving his or her individual performance. That is going to make the most difference. But so we always solicit feedback as part of, we're measuring to see if we're succeeding in what we're doing. And that's one of the measurements we use, either through 360 or sometimes I do a more informal feedback and we put numbers to it. But if you'll buy that we all have blind spots, then how are you going to figure out what they are and not let them hurt you? So you solicit feedback, and then you learn and grow from it. It's, you look for trends, you look for nuggets of wisdom. All feedback is not created equal. You're going to get some bad feedback. You're going to get somebody who's irritated about something or other with an axe to grind.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be selective, look for trends or nuggets. But leaders who get feedback or solicit feedback regularly tend to get better and more successful over time. Those, once again, those who tend to be more insecure, don't want to hear anything negative, so they never learn. They tend to get worse and worse over time and less successful. Let me say this again, having spent lots of time dealing with my own insecurities, we all got them.
Right.
It just depends on what you do after you figure them out. You say, right. Well, what am I going to do about that? Am I going to hide from the world and pretend I'm perfect, or am I going to go out there and learn some new skills and take it to the next level?
So how do I know I'm getting quality feedback?
What we look for is convergence, not necessarily consensus. Everybody doesn't have to agree. But if you've got a team of 10 people and six of them say you're being too domineering, that's worth listening to.
Mm.
I look at it as convergence on a theme. If most of your folks, if you think they're good team members and they're telling you're making a mistake or you have an opportunity to improve, then we'll pay attention to it. If one or two people say that, we don't take it as seriously because you're not going to change your personality dramatically anyhow. We look for the things that are really going to, the levers to pull that are going to help you be a better leader and help you scale your business better.
Those things that have the most impact.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Aligning growth in individuals with that of the organization. That's always the trick, particularly with smaller companies that are just coming out of the chute, shall we say, that maybe a lot of them have limited roles, right? They don't really have multiple roles in the company where people can, that they can morph into. Talk about offering growth opportunities for individuals that align with the growth objectives of a company.
It's tricky in the beginning when you have a small team. If you lose somebody, it hurts more. When you add somebody, there's more risk to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't work out, it hurts more. In the beginning, especially the entrepreneur, the leader, but everybody needs to be able to wear usually more than one hat because we just don't have enough folks to have those. There are seven basic functions in a business, and we just don't have the money or to hire a specialist in each one of those. Like, for instance, an HR professional, you have to get to be, what, around 50 employees or a pretty good size before you can invest in a professional HR person. So people have to be flexible and be willing to, they be excited about the business, which usually has to do with, if you're a growing business, it's a lot easier to get good folks to come and stay because they see a path to reach their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, the roles get more specialized. You can, for the founder as well as for other folks. But people are there to meet their individual goals, to take care of themselves and their families. And if you can, and if you've hired good people, then they will usually pitch in and with what needs to be done, because they know better things are coming and they'll get to do a whole lot more of what they maybe wanted to do as the company grows and roles get more specialized. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, I think so. Well, let me mirror this back and see if I got it. That A players, that's who we're talking about, that A players are willing to ride with the person if they believe in the person and the business.
Right. And that's the advantage you have a lot of times over corporate America.
Right.
Because you got the flexibility. You can say, here are your goals. We can get you there. And we're not going to work you till you drop, because that's not our culture.
Yeah.
And we're gonna take care of you and your family as best we can. And you're going to get to do what you want to do and meet your financial goals. And a lot of times in corporate America, it's a lot more structured and limiting than that.
Yeah. And so therefore that A player is a lot more, are they a lot more patient in general with getting into exactly the role they want because those other factors outweigh?
That's the happiness piece, right? They're excited about the future. They're excited about the vision and the part they can play in it. We all like those caring relationships with others. We all like being part of something that's bigger than we are. And they have a voice. They actually have some control. I moved from big company consulting to working with smaller companies for a couple of reasons: to get control of my time and get out of airplanes and hotels, for one, and not miss my kids growing up. And then I was working for a steel mill in Pennsylvania, and we were trying to save $3 million a month, and up at corporate, they were losing $30 million a month. So we knew that we were just arranging deck chairs on the Titanic, and sure enough, they did. But in a small company, you can actually get in a room and have a voice in where the business is going, help achieve the vision. You get the ways to fulfill yourself and leverage happiness and that passion. Sometimes more than you do in big companies, because you have more control.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're coming down on time here. Let's turn this over and talk about those business owners that have scaled and now have decided maybe they've got retirement in their future. Maybe they've just decided they've crossed the wrong river and they want to come back and they want to descale, as it were. Let's talk to those folks.
Once again, it comes down to how much money is enough to pay your bills with some left over for fun. Mm. And I had a client who had that exact situation. He'd always, because of the business he's in and how good he is at it, he always had more business than he could say grace over. So he decided he'd scale up and take advantage of all this business that was coming his way, hired up a bunch of folks, and he realized that he loves doing the work. Oh, man, I do too. Like being the pro from Dover and helping people and having a big time, and he was making plenty of money, and folks started leaving that he'd hired and just decided that he was going to scale back down to where he was happier, because he's, once again, he's got a great family life. He's got his health. He's got plenty of money to do what he wants to do. And he just decided he was happier at a smaller scale. So he just let some business opportunities go. He can pick and choose, which is an enviable position from a lot of people's perspective. But for him, it's funny because he had the opposite problem. He had too much business and too many employees.
I guess that's, of all the problems you could have, that's probably a pretty decent problem to have, right?
That's a good first world problem to have.
That is a good first world problem to have. Doc Dockery, his firm is the Resolve Firm. Doc is the author of a book I recommend. It's called Leadership, Happiness, and Profit, 12 Steps to a High Performance Business. Doc, this has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
I've loved it, John. Thanks.
Absolutely. But before we let you go, though, let's give contact information. If someone listening has heard something that makes them think, hey, I need to get in touch with Doc, how do they do that?
You can Google the Resolve Firm, and all the contact information is there. And then, of course, I'm on LinkedIn. I welcome folks reaching out to me on LinkedIn. I've got a LinkedIn weekly newsletter that you inspired, as a matter of fact. And so that's a good way to communicate with people as well.
Okay. Terrific. Doc Reed from the Resolve Firm. Doc, thanks again.
My pleasure.
Hey, folks, just a reminder that speaking of books, I've got a book out. It's called The Generosity Mindset, A Journey to Business Success by Raising Your Confidence, Value, and Prices. If you're having issues around value, how to express your value, adopting a mindset of value, pricing your services more effectively, proposals, and other essential elements to growing your services business, I wrote this book for you. So you can find it where all fine books are sold, as the old saying goes, but you can also go to thegenerositymindset.com to learn more. If you'd like to email me directly, feel free. My email address is john@johnray.co. Thank you for joining us on the Price and Value Journey.